Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Our talks are totally focused on the Satipatthana Vipassana, Mindfulness Insight Meditation. In the last 18 weeks, we were discussing about this meditation. When one is practicing, it is very important to focus or to incline your mind to see the cessations of every object that you are observing. Okay. By inclining it, you will see the cessation or the ending or the disappearing of every object. That will prompt you to see Dharma a lot quicker and faster. Keeping that in mind, one observes the object intensely, closely, penetratively, and deeply, not superficially. A full effort, like laser beam-like. That kind of quality observation, one must apply each and every object and each and every observation. And thirdly, one must repeat that kind of a process or observation continuously, constantly, without a break and a gap. That is the way one must observe mindfulness insight meditation if you are practicing that. And if you look at it, this whole aspect is everything is directly related to yourself and to your effort and what you must do. Okay. Everything is what you must do. And how you must apply, in what manner, in what way. Everything is your own application, your own effort. Those aspects are dealt in the last 18 Dharma talks. And today, the Buddha not only tells you what to do and how to do, which must apply directly by yourself at the moment of meditation. He also talked about the environmental situation and condition related to your meditation. What it is, supporting factors. As soon as you see supporting factors, this is outside you, from the environment, from the surrounding, the conditions that enveloped your meditation practice and yourself. So we'll be dealing with that aspect. What are the supportive conditions? And these supportive conditions, of course, this is not what you are doing, which directly related to you and that you are responsible. This is what others outside, interrelationship with outside. So sometime you may have the perfect condition, sometime you may not have it. That must be fully aware. When you have it, use it with grace. When you don't have it, have perseverance, have tolerance, have patience, and deal with whatever you have. Don't complain about it. Don't use it as an excuse not to do it. Don't use it as an excuse that you are not progressing because of these conditions. That kind of attitude one must bear in mind. The first one the Buddha said is, avasa sapaya. Avasa is more or less, it's more like a shade. Okay. Because India, Burma, those are very hot country, tropical country. If you go under the shade, you got relief from this very hot sun. Okay, a shade. Or in other words, it's a place that you can rest your body with ease. So in this case, you can call a place, accommodation. Okay, a place, accommodation, a building, a structure. That's, you can call it avasa. Sapaya is, it has the, at least the basic necessity and requirements, or in harmony, do what you are doing. A place which harmonize and give you the best support so that you can meditate with your full effort and strength. It's avasa sapaya. That is important. If you have a good one, you progress a lot faster. If you don't have it, of course you have to bear the difficulties that comes along with the lack of that accommodation. So in accommodation, of course, we can nowadays say, are we going to do in a five-star hotels, or a great monastery, or a little monastery, or it's a little house in a village, or even under a little hut under the tree, or simply under the tree. These are all ranges. So which one is the right one? So in here, the Buddhists give five specific, okay, factors what it applies, that what is called the proper suitable accommodation. The first one is, it must not be too far or too near. Okay, that's the first requisites of the accommodation. Let's say you live in Vancouver. Okay, every week or every month, if you have to drive about 6-7 hours to go and meditate, do a meditation place, that's too far. It's already about 5-6 hour back and forth. You are on the road for a whole day and also tire you out. Or if it is about an hour or two, well, that's not so bad. Of course, if we can get it in about 45 minutes, even better. But regardless, what it is, if it is too far, there are a few things it comes along with it. First of all, it's you waste a day time, or tired you out. Some people may not be able to drive. Some people don't have a car. And so on and so forth, difficulty arises. And also, it implies that there are not everybody, some people might have at home, people who needs help, okay? People who need to look after, emergency, or you yourself might need a emergency when you get old and sick. These kind of things can happen because you never know. So these kind of situation, if you are not too far, whenever these things happen, you can have easy access within a short period of time. If you have an emergency at home, you can go back. If you have somebody sick at home, you don't be too worried. If you are about 6 hours away, oh, it will take me about 6-7 hours to get back. That kind of thing. Some sort of mental worries can arise with conditions related to the distance. That is one thing. And too near, when it is too near to where you live or where people live, what happens is, number one, a lot of your people, relatives, friends can come, might or can come and visit you because easy access. A lot of people will visit that place. So in other words, it becomes a disturbance. So choose a place which is not too far or too near. And number two is noises. See, in modern day is the traffic, okay? Whether it is planes or trains or car. And in the olden days too, a caravan of carts or chariots and so on. These kind of traffic noises can be quite highly disturbed. And also the place where you are, is it quite close to a bazaar or market or so on and so forth, where there's a lot of constant heavy noises are going. So less in noises. If you can get almost silence, that's perfect. So that is the number two requirements for a good accommodation. Not too far, not too near, and the noises or traffic or any other noises, constant noises that could disturb your meditation. So that's number two. And number three, okay. Number three is less disturbance from insects and bites and so on. Insects and bites is, we all know so well, especially in Canada, there's a lot of mosquitoes and the black flies. And in every part of the world, there's some kind of insects. It's always okay, coming, crawling, biting at you. It doesn't hurt you. It doesn't make you severely to go into a hospital or so. But these things really irritate you, like even mosquito bites. After a while, you have what happened? It's all your, most of your meditation is scratching, 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 itchy, itchy, itchy. So it is tougher to get meditation or concentration. So these insect bites must be, insects or mosquitoes or must be less, or you must have a protective nature. And we are all talking about meditation buildings and center, because in the modern day, in the olden day, it's not. Some go and meditate in the forest. So in the forest too, they have to, before they start, they have to accurately build a place where, okay, number one, safe from the larger animals, okay, that could hurt and harm you. And number two, protective from the mosquitoes and insects. If you are near the, if you want to be close to the water and in the valley, go down to the valley, there will be more mosquitoes. But if you take a little higher ground, the breeze is blowing and there is less mosquito or no mosquito, the wind blows away. Those are the kind of things one have to prepare ahead of time. Or you have a mosquito net, okay? So you go with the mosquito net and cover it. Nowadays we have a mosquito repellent and so on and so forth. So in other words, we should prepare to ward against the mosquito bites and disturbance, irritation and itching. This is the number three requirement. And number four, my mind keep on slipping. And number four is it'll come back. And another factor is, one thing is you must have a good friend, number five. So when you're meditating, of course, sometimes it's a self-retreat, you go alone and meditate. But in general, even in the olden days, okay, at the times of Buddha, the monks go out with a group of people, like a group of monks. And always there's always a leader as well. Sometimes there's a teacher along with it. Okay, they go out and meditate. When they go out and meditate, if you are just simply meditators together, they have a different level of what you call level that they have attained. And occasionally, not every day, occasionally you can talk, you can discuss, you can shuffle information so that it promotes the growth of your meditation. But nowadays, it is in the meditation center, and it is a deep meditation teacher along with it. So this, a good friend, can be your co-yogis who are walking together, who are a lot more senior than you, or who could be also a teacher. And specifically, the Buddhists refer to as a teacher. Okay? The Buddhist word is called Kalyana Metta, a good friend. So one needs a very good and competent teacher when you are meditating. And when you are meditating, and if you have a good and competent teacher, your growth is very fast. Your growth is very fast. If you are meditating alone without any guide or instruction or what to do, what not to do, then you can and you will still grow, but at a lot slower pace. And how important it is to have a good teacher is there's a, in one of the sutras, there was a conversation between the Shin Ananda and the Buddha. Shin Ananda is his attendant for the last 25 years of his life. And whenever Buddha speaks, he doesn't just speak out of the blue. Whenever somebody asks a question, he answers. And when he answers, then it becomes a sutra. Okay? A sutra or sutta. Or sometimes the whole group might be sitting together and some event might be happening right in front of them, and then Buddha might draw that attention to that incident or condition, and a sutra or discourses will arise. This is how the teachings happen. But in here is we are not talking about the whole sutta, but one thing is Shin Ananda asked in that one incident, this phrase is, "Oh, Lord Buddha, by having a good friend, okay, a Kalyana Metta, Dharma friend, so it is like as if you are already successful, 50% you are already successful in your practice or on your path to Dharma." And the Buddha said, "No, Shin Ananda, okay, if you have a very good and competent teacher, you can safely assume that it is 100% you are on the way." Of course, in here is provided the people are seriously practicing and fully committed. That is without being said. A yogi who is seriously practicing and fully committed and have a very good and competent teacher, you can safely assume that you will reach the end of the journey or the goal that you are having in your mind, in which here it is the Ariyaship, to become a noble person. To that level, it is important, okay, that much importance it has. So in here, if we recap it, first of all, it must not be too far or too near. Secondly, that noise must be less. And number three, insects, okay? You must be protected against the insects. And number four, still I couldn't recall. And number five, you must have a good teacher. So there are five things that one needs to have a good accommodation. Oh, number four is requisites. Number four is requisites. The place must have proper requisites, food and lodging and water and so on, that you use and you apply every day. That requisites must be there. So as long as you have these five factors or five requirements are there, you can consider that is a good, okay, accommodation for you to practice meditation. So in here, what is a good requisites, or what are the necessity of a good accommodation or a place? And in here is, first and foremost is, that place have a good place to sleep and also to eat food requirements. Food must be reasonably good and easily available. A place for accommodation, sleeping, eating, and all other facilities that you need, that a person needs on a daily basis. They must be pretty well, okay, provided in that place or available in that place. So nowadays, we don't have to worry too much about it. In the meditation center, what happened is they all provide it all the time. Okay, especially in a situation like mindfulness inside meditation center, they cater you to a tea and provide it. And also the food. Even the food, sometimes you might not get exactly as you wish or want, but at least there's enough, nutritious enough so that it can provide you to maintain and sustain your body and refresh on your mind and keep on practicing. So those are the five types of requisites that one needs for sapaya, awasa sapaya, proper accommodation or a place to practice. And if you have them, they are the supportive factors. As we started from the beginning, if you have them all, it's great. But if you don't have it, that's whatever that is, that's a choice. If something is lacking, you must bear, you must be patient, and you have to practice. Do not use as an excuse for not to do, or do not use as an excuse for not you progressing. So that is the first supporting factor. So in here too, there's one. As far as the accommodation is concerned, the Buddha's expounded in Lent. He divided into four types of accommodation. Okay. The first one are the five factors, five qualities that one needs or required in an accommodation. And there are four types of accommodation too. Okay, we have a meditation center, or you're meditating with a somewhere, somehow. Nowadays, it's halfway around the world. It's not too far. Okay, by our standard, of course, before you leave, you make sure there's you do not expect any urgency or emergency to come right back from around the world. Anywhere that one wish to go and meditate, we can meditate. Accessibility is there, but decision one has to make. Okay? Use your common sense and make that. The key thing is while you are there, whether you need for medical emergency purpose, whether they are there, they are not there, Okay, where is the closest, especially if you have a pre-existing condition. Okay. Then you must calculate all these things and put it in place and go and meditate. So not too far, not too near is nowadays, it could be halfway around the world. For some people, it might be too far. Some people, it's okay. You have to make sense out of your own condition and go. And also, medical facilities. How it is, what kind of prevention, what kind of medicine to take. These kind of things has to consider. And you go and meditate. And when you meditate these places, okay, there are so many places. Even in Canada, there are so many different groups and places. In US, you go, even within the same tradition, mindfulness, insight meditation, you can have here. You can go to States and meditate. You can go to Burma or Malaysia or Thailand or Singapore or Indonesia and so on. Right now, one of the yogis is meditating in Malaysia, and another one of our yogis is meditating in California, San Jose. It's different places, but they are all mindfulness insights group. And when you are meditating those things, okay, especially those people who like to go and meditate in all different places, okay, some don't, some do, but if you do, when you go and meditate, in some places you'll find that your meditation, you don't progress. You've been meditating there for a week or two. There's no progress. Okay, assuming you are putting effort, assuming you are doing correctly, okay, as correctly as you can. But there's no progress. And also, all the requisites are very sparse, okay? Not enough food, not enough the right food, okay? And in Burma, there are monasteries. Some monasteries, everything is overflowing. Some monastery, they cannot even sustain one meal a day. It's quite difficult, so. Quite difficult because it depends on the karma of the abbots, of the monks who is operating that center. Based on that, these requisites are plentiful or these requisites are rare. Some abbots or monks doesn't have good karma, so there's not much requisites, people donating. Some has like overabundant, overflowing. These are all the karmic, okay, product of these monks or the abbots who are operating that area. Based on the parami and based on what they have done, there's plentiful or very rare. You can find many places, there's quite a district. Just like in a life, daily life in a human, there's very poor people, homeless, not enough food, and there's billionaires and billionaires and billionaires. The same thing, these are the products of the karma. The same thing with the monks too, the same thing with the monastery. So a place where you went or where you're going is very poor in requisites as well as you are not progressing. If that's the case, the Buddha said, you may leave that center at once. You may leave that center at once. You don't even have to say, okay, I'm leaving. Okay, if there's no way, you just simply pack and leave because that is not the right place. Requisites are small, so you have a great hardship in your meditation. You are not progressing because whoever the teacher who is teaching you is not competent enough or does not have enough knowledge or in fact does not even know how to instruct you properly, even though you are putting a great effort. So you don't have the right teacher, or even say wrong teacher, you don't know requisite, leave that place at once. That's Buddhist words. And then there's another type of accommodation. That another type of accommodation is you go there and you meditate. You meditate, and what happens is there's plenty of requisites, plenty of food, and whatever the requirement means, mattress, pillows, mosquito nets, good showers, good soap, air condition, and so on and so forth. There's plenty. Okay? But you practice and you practice and you practice. You do not progress. Subject to that you are really putting effort as being instructed. As always subject, on your part, you are not failing. Okay, it is only the environmental part we are talking about. You are putting great effort with great sadha, great faith and confidence. But no progress, but you have lots of food and everything is very comfortable. You can just drift it there for another 2-3 months and come back after 2-3 months enjoying the facilities but without any growth in your meditation. And if that's the case, what the Buddha said was, that center you must also leave, but saying proper, okay, properly saying and giving proper respect to the abbot, to the management, saying thank you very much, okay, you guys help a lot, provide us all these great things, but for some reason or the other, I have to leave. You have to say that you are leaving. You cannot just pack and go, because they have provided you at least with material requirements. It's only the mental food that they cannot provide. One must leave after saying goodbye. That is the second type of accommodation. And then there's a third type of accommodation. The type of accommodation is you went there and you meditate. You meditate. And this meditation center or monastery requisites are sparse. Okay, you don't have much material support. Okay, sparse, you have to struggle with it. Or, especially for Westerners, you don't have the food that you like to eat. Or hygienic are not very good. Okay, not very hygienic place, and so on and so forth. But your meditation progresses leaps and bounds. You really see the Dharma, you really see the true nature of Dharma. Leaps and bounds you are progressing. And at that kind of setup, the Buddha said, have patience, have tolerance. Try to look at with a wise attitude, yonisomanasikara. And then, with patience and tolerance, you keep staying there and you keep meditating. Don't leave if your meditation is really growing and progressing. That is the third type of accommodation. And the fourth type of accommodation is you went to a center and that center is plentiful in everything. They support you in every which way they could do the best. Let's say that's a 5-star meditation center in terms of materiality and support. And also, meditation, you really grow. You progress really good. You progress mean, don't think, today is 1, tomorrow 2, tomorrow's 3. It's not in that. In other words, you're meditating and all the time, you are discovering or you are experiencing the Dharma that you haven't experienced before. That is the growth. Don't try and measure with, jnana 1 or jnana 2 or jnana 10. Don't go that way. Every day you meditate and every day you experience something that you haven't experienced before. Every day you experientially understand something that you haven't understood before. Sometimes the same thing that you understood in many different ways. That is a progress. It is not today, tomorrow, the next day, everything the same, nothing new. Everything is rise and fall, then yes, no progress. But there's always something that you haven't experienced before, that hasn't happened to you before, happened something, whatever the slightest, smallest thing, trivial thing may be, that is the progress. Sometimes the same thing experienced in 10 different ways, okay? Your understanding of that is the same, okay, the same thing. Okay, 1 + 1 = 2. That 1 + 1 = 2, you find it in many different modes, many different ways. The answer always 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, but it's in many different ways and methods you find them. That itself is a progress too. Depending on the parami, people understand these things. Some people just simply understand pain. Okay, oh, pain, painful. You observe it and finally you overcome the pain. That's it. Pain, unpleasant, or dukkha. And some people, the same dukkha, you understand with pain in a many different ways of pains and in a many different modes, many different directions. It is not the same, but the essence is you understand the pain, but in so many ways. Okay. And all these depends on the parami of the person. Some people, their parami is they try to specialize in, let's call this for lack of a better word, simply just it is, pinya, wisdom. They like to pursue, okay, not only understanding, okay, not only experiencing, not only attaining ariyaship or the end of suffering. In that process, they really like to understand in many different ways. Let's say so that they can write a 3 theses out of it. That kind of thing. Because that person is pursuing, his parami is specializing in pinya. And these people experience different way. And another person specializes in some sort of a mental power. And they specialize in mental power. The same thing, anicca, dukkha, anatta, you understand and experience in many different ways. Some people, they don't specialize anything. They simply just anicca, dukkha, anatta. And they don't have any sort of special experience. Special in that way is to, in a descriptive way. But their experience is simple. They see this nature of impermanence. They see this nature of suffering or unsatisfactoriness in a very simplistic way, in the most simple form, the way we are talking. Okay? Rising and falling, it rise and it disappear. That's it. Nothing more than that. But some people has a many different unique way or with many special effects, that kind of thing. And all depends on your parami, all depends on that individual specialization or pursuit from lives to lives. So don't try and compare your experience with other experience. But at the same time, without going into grasping, without going into craving, you can discuss about this thing and listen to it. Eventually, it is just a matter of understanding the 3 characteristics of mind and matter. Lobha, anicca, dukkha, and anatta. So keep that in mind. Don't think you have to experience like the way the other person have to experience. So those are the little things when you are practicing should bear in mind. I have some yogis who try very hard and that person is experiencing in a very natural and normal way. It is very good, very satisfactory. But that yogi heard so many stories from other yogis who experience, and that yogi thinks, I'm not growing, I'm not progressing, and leave. There's nothing a teacher can do rather than keep on explaining, no, you are doing well, but they cannot be satisfied with the simple, very most simplistic understanding of anicca, dukkha, anatta. They think these kind of special effects experience has to happen, and they got discouraged and gone. Sadly enough, but there's nothing one can do, because eventually it depends on your own decision. So those are the kind of things. These experiences are the growth. The growth means you are growing in your meditation, you are progressing. So the most and the shortest form, you experience the specific characteristics of physical phenomenon and mental phenomenon. That's the first one. You have to experience the specific characteristics. In other words, the ultimate realities in a specific form, because each and every object have their own specific unique characteristic. Those must be experienced. And from the repeated experience of these specific characteristics, eventually you come to understand the general characteristics, which is simply put, the three marks or three characteristics of mind and matter, which is everything is impermanence, in a state of transience at all time, ever changing. Secondly, it is dukkha, suffering or unsatisfactoriness. Or in other words, or on a meditative form, it is the, you know, the constant oppression of mind and matter with the process of ever changing. That oppression, you felt oppressed through that changing process. And thirdly, you began to see this mind and matter is simply a phenomenon, simply a natural phenomenon. This is a physical phenomenon, this is a physical process. This is a mental phenomenon, that's a mental process. And everything is related, linked with the law of cause and effect. That's it. And that understanding, they are simply a process, they are simply a phenomenon. Everything interwoven through cause and effect, cause and effect. But other than this, there's no self, there's no soul, there's no individual, there is no personality, there's no being. And these self, okay, a self or a soul, personality or individuality or beings, are the concept we applied to this physical and mental phenomenon operating under the law of cause and effect. And as we don't understand, truly understand this operation of physical and mental phenomenon under the law of cause and effect, but they are in a, such a speed that is incomprehensible. There's nothing there is to measure it. And we believe that the same thing, the same phenomenon, the two phenomena as a self, a soul, a person, a being, or an individual. That's anatta. Okay. Basically, the other one is atta. Atta means a self, a soul, an individual, a person, personality, a being. That's atta. And what the Buddha is, Buddha doesn't discover anything new. The same thing, what everybody call as atta, the Buddha said, no, that atta is not an atta. It is a phenomenon. It is a process. He just simply don't declare it as a phenomenon and a process. He explained in detail how the workings of this nama and rupa are. He showed it. He explained it. And not only that, he showed and he explained it. And he gave you a method to practice so that you can personally experience what he had explained. And only then he considered that you truly understand. Just by listening to what he said, listening to what he explained, okay, or blindly believe in what he said, no, you still don't understand. You must experience directly. What I said is a guideline, a direction. You do this way, and if you do this, you will definitely experience and understand that what you call a self or a soul or a person is simply the two phenomenon, physical phenomenon and mental phenomenon, operating intricately through the law of cause and effect. Anicca, dukkha, anatta. Impermanence or state of transience or states of change, constant change. Dukkha, unsatisfactory nature of this nama and rupa. And anatta, it is simply a process, simply a phenomenon. Other than that, there is no other thing that exists for eternal or undestructive nature. So that is called general characteristic. That's it. You understand the specific characteristics of nama and rupa, and you understand the general characteristics of nama and rupa. That is the growth or the progress of your meditation, or that is the growth of your insight. And that's why we call this meditation insight meditation or vipassana meditation. We understand all these things what the Buddha had explained to us through our own practice. And what is that practice? Sati. Constant, uninterrupted, deep, penetrative mindfulness of every physical and mental object arising at the present moment. And to sum it up, that's it. So if you are experiencing those things in your retreat, 2 months retreat, 3 months retreat, every day, okay, the given is you are putting the best effort of your life. You are putting the effort that is required for this practice. If you don't do that, nobody can help you. Eventually, you are responsible for your own. The teacher is simply showing you anything that you are not doing correctly, how to turn, where to turn. That's it. And if a teacher can show you competently about everything what you are doing wrong, that means you are doing right, and if you are doing right, and if you are putting the greatest effort, what is necessary, you will definitely experience the progress or insight. So the last meditation center is your requisites are plenty, your requirements are plenty, and also your meditation is progressing. Those meditation center, the way the Buddha said is, even if the abbot asks you, okay, you have been here for 6 months, okay, you can go home. Even with that, if you're progressing, beg the abbot, please don't let me go home, let me stay longer. That, to that level, the Buddhists recommend. So there are four types of accommodation. One is a place, poor requisites, no group. You can pack your bags and leave at once. Another place is, there's plenty of requisites, no growth. You say and say, thank you for taking me in, but I have to leave, and you leave. And the third one is, very poor requisites, but your meditation grows, your insight grows. Be patient, be tolerant, and bear the hardship and keep on meditating. And the fourth one is plenty of requisites and your growth is very good. Those places, even if they push you out, beg them not to push out and keep on staying. So those are the things that one needs as a support. The first support, which is called Avasa Sapaya, right, suitable accommodation that can support the growth of your meditation. You don't have the control over it, but you can always choose. The choice is always yours. So that is one external support for your growth of meditation. And second one is they call it arms. And this thing is specifically come out because of for the monks. For the monks, especially in the olden days, okay, the monks are they don't have any belongings other than the clothes that they wear, the robes that they wear, and the arms bowl and the little rope around them, and also the water strainer, needle and thread, and a little fan or something to put a shade over your bald head. Those are the 8 things that they are allowed to own. They can say, this is mine. Other than that, the monks does not own anything. Even if the monk is living in a multi-million dollar monastery, they don't own it. They are just there as a guest to use it while they are there. Nobody owns it. In a Buddhist sense, the public owns it. So those are the 8 requisites the monks are allowed to have. So in here, whether you stay in a monastery or especially if you are meditating, when you meditate, usually the monks don't stay in a monastery. The monastery is a place, there's a heavy traffic. All the people comes and goes, they ask, they come in, they want to pray, they ask you to come for the funeral or for the birthdays and so on and so forth. It's a very busy place and they cannot say no to people who come and ask help and guidance. And every full moon days and every half full moon days, they have to give Dharma talks and precepts and so on. So when a monk stay in a monastery, they do not really have time for themselves. So they usually go away from the monastery and then go and find some place which fills with the 5 requisites. Okay, the first 5 requisites. Not far, not too near. This far and near is what? It is, they have to have food. Okay, when you are not staying at the monastery, they have to have food, and for that food, they have to go to the nearest town or a village for the alms round. For the alms round, and then they collect food for about 1.5 or 2 hours and come back at a proper place near the water and eat and clean, and that's it. And if they stay too far from the place or village where they can go for an alms round, then they are wasting a lot of your time, a lot of time in just collecting food. That's why for the monks, this is especially a place where you have to collect food or the goings for the alms round must not be too far or too near, because that is especially for these. But nowadays in the monastery, then you don't. But even in the monastery, if you are the full-time monk, okay, except for when you are old or when you are sick or when you are abbot, other than that, according to the Vinaya, which means the disciplines and rules the monk has to follow, they have to go alms round. They cannot sit there and eat every day food on the table, whatever they bring it for you, whatever the people bring it for you. And if they do that, if they don't go for alms round, then they are breaking one of their discipline. They call it offense, smaller offense. But if a people purposely invited, then you accept it. You don't have to go to arms round. But you don't sit there every day expecting for the food to come and put it on your table. They have to go arms round every morning. Because that's why you will see people who have been to Burma or Thailand or Sri Lanka. The monks are going around in the morning, put their robes on with their palms on, and they collect food because they have to do it. If they don't do it, if they are lazy, if they depend with luxury for the people to bring in food every day, they are committing an offense. Okay. So the monks are 227, that's one of the offense. So that kind of a thing, your place for going arms round must not be too far, okay, or too near. If you are too near, the people will come to your place, talk to you, ask you, and so on. There are some people who are considerate that you are meditating. There are some people who are not considerate. They are troubled. Whatever the trouble they have is bigger than what you are meditating, and they will ask your help. So that kind of thing also applies for too far and too near. That applies especially for the monks who goes for arms round. So, and if it is too near, they come in, that's noisy. That's why you won't have much, okay, quietness. Talking, asking people, or people pass by, bullock carts going by, that noises. So that is also on a too far and too near, less noise, too much traffic noise. And of course, mosquitoes and insect bites, it's already taken in. And then also requisites, they have to depend to the village that is close by, about an hour walk, half an hour walk. But you stay in a forest where there is no people pass around you, those kind of things. And also, one should have a co-meditator or a teacher to go in. So that number two, arms round, that's also a support. The first one is generally as an accommodation. The second one is specifically, it has to be, okay, suitable for your daily arms round. So which means this is specifically for the monk. So with those two supporting factors, okay, we will conclude today. The Buddha gives seven supporting factors, and we cover two, and there are five more to come. So may all of you be able to practice Satipatthana Vipassana meditation precisely, correctly, and diligently, and may you be able to experience the true nature of Nama and Rupa as soon as possible. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Buddham bhujami, Dhammam bhujami, Sangham bhujami. Thank you very much.